Administration is sending hundreds more immigration and federal agents, even after an ICE agent shot and killed Renee Good during an immigration raid in South Minneapolis. City and state officials say ICE's presence in the Twin Cities has disrupted daily life and is creating an atmosphere of fear among residents in general, and are calling for ICE to leave the state. The operation has led to detention of hundreds of immigrants and protesters and daily public protests and conflicts. We begin the program with reactions from community members about Operation Metro Surge, the killing of Renee Good, and what they expect might come next. Then, we look at how hazardous road conditions are affecting drivers, along with tips on how to stay safe on winter roads. And we conclude with ways to protect yourself and your health when clearing your sidewalks and driveways. But first, here are some of the stories that made the headlines this week. The Hennepin County Attorney's Office and the Minnesota Attorney General's Office are collecting and preserving evidence for their investigation into the killing of Renee Good in Minneapolis. The move follows the FBI's decision to withdraw its cooperation agreement with the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. The Hennepin County attorney said she's been meeting with law enforcement and community leaders to support a thorough and transparent investigation.
So let me be clear here. We do have jurisdiction to make this decision that happened in this case where her life was taken in Hennepin County. It does not matter that it was a federal law enforcement agent.
Residents can submit photos or videos through an online portal on the Hennepin County Attorney's website and social media pages. Meanwhile, the Federal Department of Justice says it will not pursue a criminal civil rights case against the ICE agent who shot Renee Good. But the FBI is still investigating the killing. In other news, Minnesota's Attorney General is trying to get ICE and other federal agents out of our state, but has already faced his first setback. He filed a federal lawsuit to stop what he calls an unconstitutional surge of federal agents into Minnesota.
We allege that the obvious targeting of Minnesota for our diversity, for our democracy, and our differences of opinion with the federal government is a violation of the Constitution and of federal law. We allege that the surge's reckless impact on our schools, on our local law enforcement, is a violation of the 10th Amendment and the sovereign laws and powers of the Constitution grants to states.
State and city officials say the thousands of armed and masked federal agents are carrying out militarized raids, illegal stops, and excessive force arrests under the banner of immigration enforcement. The lawsuit asks the court to end the operation and prevent federal agents from targeting protesters, bystanders, and people at schools, churches, and hospitals. But a court ruled against the state's request to stop the operation immediately, instead giving the federal government more time to respond. The court may rule later this month after hearing more from both sides. You're listening to North Star Stories. I'm Chantel Sings. In today's main story, just blocks from George Floyd Square in Minneapolis, a chaotic confrontation between federal agents and protesters ended with an ICE officer shooting and killing a local woman. The federal officer's use of fatal force ignited a fierce debate over the right to protest versus the tactics federal officers are using and even the justification for their presence. Up next, Catherine DeSalle looks at the deeply polarizing aftermath and why it's prompting calls for peaceful protests.
Say her name!
Renee Good!
In Minneapolis, just blocks away from where George Floyd was murdered in the summer of 2020, thousands of people gathered to honor the life of Renee Good, a 37-year-old woman who was shot and killed by an Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, agent.
Renee cared for the people in this city, and that is more than any ICE agent or any police officer could say.
That was Noah, an organizer with Twin Cities Coalition for Justice, one of many who spoke at several vigils honoring Renee Good. For their protection, we are using first names only for our sources in this report. While Noah praised Good for her bravery, the narrative of how and why Renee Good died depends entirely on who you ask. Video of the shooting shows her car stopped perpendicular on the street, blocking traffic near an ongoing ICE operation. Officers shouted obscenities at Good, demanding she get out of the car. And as she attempted to drive away, a federal agent shot and killed her. prompting a debate and divide in the community. Was she driving away from or directly at an officer? On social media, President Trump called Good a professional agitator, claiming she viciously ran over the agent. In a press conference, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem went further.
She attempted to run a law enforcement officer over. This appears as an attempt to kill or to cause bodily harm to agents, an act of domestic terrorism.
But at the vigil, that story sounded very different.
And now we're seeing lies from the federal administration calling her a domestic terrorist. That's a lie. She showed up to watch the terrorists.
Others at the vigil, like Gar, a Minneapolis resident, questioned how we as a community can stop tragedies like this from happening.
There is a human, and they had a gun, and they decided to pull the trigger, and why did they decide to do that? Nobody wants to pull the trigger on someone. Even these ICE agents are human, and they have this thing that they're trying to do, and how can we be there to be like, you just don't do that?
ICE agents are creating a lot of fear for many Minnesotans. Mira is a community organizer with MIRAC, Minnesota Immigrant Rights Action Committee, a volunteer organization that is fighting to end immigration raids.
People have been very afraid to even leave their houses at all or to take their kids to school, or children are afraid that when they get home from school, their parents are going to be gone.
Mira hopes the death of Renee Good empowers community members to stand up to ICE.
Instead of letting the incident scare people into submission or staying home and not taking action, I'm hoping people see how necessary it is for all of us to be in the streets to show that the power of the people is stronger than the people in power.
And this is where the division lies. While Mira and Gar see a community protecting others and defending itself, other Minnesotans, like David, argue that interfering with federal agents creates a dangerous and unpredictable environment.
I'm all for protests.
I think this country's built on it. But the minute that you interfere with a police action, the protester is elevating the situation past where it needs to be. It escalates the problem to a safety issue.
For years, the conversation about fear and lethal force from law enforcement has centered rightfully on the dangers facing Black and Brown neighbors. But as David suggests, Renee Good may have been relying on a protection that is no longer there.
She thought they're just going to allow me to drive away because I'm a white woman. That's how I feel that her thought process was. And the minute that her vehicle got too close, unfortunately, all bets were off at that point because he has a family too, just like she did.
After learning about the death of Renee Good, Dan, a retiree who has been trained to be a legal observer, went to the scene of the shooting to document what ICE agents were doing. He ended up caught in a cloud of tear gas, a shock for a man who peacefully protested the Vietnam War.
I was shouting, get out of Minnesota, get out of Minneapolis. And some people were throwing snowballs and we were cautioning them, don't, please don't, just we're here to witness what's going on. We're not here to provoke. And then the tear gas got to me. Tear gas was everywhere. I just couldn't see and fell over.
Despite this incident, Dan still plans to attend protests and be a legal observer and asks others to do so. Governor Walz is also encouraging Minnesotans to exercise their right to protest, but to remain peaceful. Walz and others say federal agents are using strong intimidation tactics, hoping to spark violence to justify sending even more agents.
And so to Minnesotans, don't take the bait. Do not allow them to lie about the security and the decency of this state. Let's make sure we protect our neighbors. I encourage you to use your First Amendment rights and all of your constitutional rights, but do so in a peaceful manner.
Although Minnesotans may not agree on how or whom to protest, most Minnesotans agree that we are divided and that it's time to come together. Gar says,
I truly believe that we're at an opportunity as humanity basically move to the next level, realizing that we're just humans here.
David asks,
can we please just go back to common sense and stop the dangerous rhetoric from everybody, from the president to the mayor to the governor, to just everybody take a deep breath, start talking to one another?
And Dan says,
several of my friends and acquaintances have said, Dan, you're so brave. And other ones say, Dan, how dumb, why did you go? And they're both right. But even if you're not personally affected, we all are together when we all really act together.
For North Star Stories, I'm Catherine DeSalle.
Welcome back to North Star Stories. I'm Chantel Sings, and I'm joined by former Chief of Minneapolis Police Department, Madaria Arredondo, who served from 2017 to 2022. He's the first Black chief of the Minneapolis Police Department and was chief of police during the high-profile murder of George Floyd, as we all know. Chief Arredondo, welcome to North Star Stories. How are you?
Thank you, Ms. Chantel. It's always a pleasure to see you, to be in space with you.
Thank you. So just a few questions for you. We know that it's a very tough time here in Minnesota. From a policing perspective, what should officers be trained to do when protesters are loud, they're recording them, or questioning their actions?
There was a lot that came out after Mr. Floyd was murdered, and certainly Minneapolis police went into having a revamp of a lot of their trainings and protocols specifically related to how to engage with community members during protests. And one of those things, and it's going to be principal and paramount even to this day, is de-escalation. The other thing that police officers are doing is we have it in our policy, reminding police officers that people do have a First Amendment right to use their cell phones, to use cameras, to video and record those engagements.
How do you balance, though, officers' safety with First Amendment rights in that moment?
Policies are very clear. People will have the right to protest. People will have the right to use their voice. We know that sometimes these demonstrations, people are coming there from all different spaces. People may be there in a very calm way. People may be very angry. Officers can expect to hear some of that anger. But it's so key and important that officers stay calm, that they use their de-escalation techniques. Most importantly, Ms. Chantel, that they stay professional. But we know sometimes just having that uniform can be a focus of what that anger is all about. I think it's critically important, certainly for Minneapolis, that supervisors are there at the scene. If they start to see tensions creating, or if they start to perhaps see an officer go below that professionalism, to get them off of that line. The key, though, is to make sure that the officers themselves do not become a focal point of any sort of anger or frustration for those demonstrating.
For sure. You mentioned tension. And what does best practice look like for crowd management and use of force? And where do you think agencies most often fall short?
Part of it is to make sure that officers, first and foremost, have an idea of what the situation is, where they're at. You know, sometimes demonstrations look a little bit differently. You know, if it's outside of a building, whether it's folks and it's static, or whether those are folks, hundreds or thousands of folks marching through, let's say, for example, Lake Street. All of that's going to be very dependent upon how police manage that. But one of the things that I always have found useful was, and I talk about this a lot, you know, building relationships in the quiet moments, getting to know local leaders, getting to know local activists before those situations occur, so that when there are these large convenings, you know, you have someone that you can communicate with. Trying to keep that dialogue open, I think, is very important for police leaders who are going to be out there when these demonstrations occur.
If you were still chief, what would you say to the public right now that's just absolutely outraged by the actions of federal agents?
The first thing I would say, Ms. Chantel, is that I know that our city's hurting. There is a lot of pain still left. While it has been 5.5 years since Mr. Floyd was murdered, for many it seems like yesterday. Certainly the tragic death of Ms. Good seems like it has ripped off a Band-Aid from old wounds. So that's real. So the first thing is just acknowledging that it is real. The other thing I would also say, in that pain, in that grief, for many in that trauma, I would also say, I want to make sure that I'm doing all that I can not to make it worse in that sense. You know, I lived through, as well as you did, many of your listeners, we saw the pain after May 25th, 2020. We saw what it looked like to try to, you know, rebuild our city, to rebuild hope. And so in some ways, it seems very similar to that. But I will continue to have hope. The other thing I would say this, and I said this about Mr. Floyd back then, and I think it's true for Ms. Good here. At the end of the day, they both deserve justice. They both deserve due process. They both deserve a fair and impartial investigation.
Chief Arredondo, always a pleasure to have you. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Ms. Chantel, and for your listeners. Thank you.
After the break, as more winter weather is on the forecast, we take a look at how to stay safe on the state roads. This is North Star Stories, voices from where we live, produced by Ampers, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota. We'll be right back.
Tune in to hear Minnesota's statewide newscast,
North Star Stories, voices from where we live.
Each week, we bring you stories and perspectives from across the state's diverse communities.
North Star Stories amplifies voices too often missing from our state's news.
Black, Indigenous, and communities of color, people living with disabilities, elders, LGBTQIA Two-Spirit residents, and those in greater Minnesota.
Find North Star Stories, voices from where we live, in your station schedule at ampers.org and wherever you get your podcasts.
Produced by Ampers, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities.
You are listening to North Star Stories. I'm Chantel Sings. A nonpartisan audit has uncovered even more concerns about the misuse of state funds. The Office of the Legislative Auditor, or OLA, has released a new report that found widespread failures in how the Department of Human Services Behavioral Health Administration manages grant programs for mental health and substance use disorder services. The report says the agency failed to follow most state requirements, lacked basic financial controls, and even created and backdated documents after the audit began. One of the auditors expressed shock, presenting the report to the state legislator.
Frankly, in the 27-plus years I've been with OLA, I have never seen this before. I will say we have had suspicions periodically, but we have never been able to prove it, to document it, and we did in this case, and it's very troubling.
Between 2022 and 2024, the administration distributed more than $425 million to 830 grantees. But auditors found missing progress reports, incomplete financial records, and missing documentation for many required site visits. Minnesota is about to lose its last hometown airline. Allegiant and Sun Country Airlines have announced a merger agreement that will combine the two carriers. Under the deal, Allegiant will acquire Sun Country in a cash and stock transaction valued at about $1.5 billion. Sun Country Airlines was founded in 1982 by a small group of former Braniff International Airways pilots and flight attendants. The airline employs about 3,000 workers, primarily based in the Twin Cities. Executives from both airlines say the merger will expand service to more vacation destinations in the U.S. and abroad while keeping a focus on affordable travel. Next, with winter in full force, driving has become trickier than ever. The freezing and thawing has created especially icy streets in some parts of the state. Other areas have dealt with heavy snow. Reporter Jamad Jama talks with drivers and officials about how to stay safe on the roads this winter.
From the Twin Cities to Greater Minnesota, drivers are once again figuring out how to handle winter roads safely.
Winter kind of came early this year, and we've already had a significant amount of snow compared to the previous years. But it seems like every year we need to kind of relearn how to drive in the wintertime.
That's Lieutenant Michael Lee with the Minnesota State Patrol. When it comes to navigating the roads, his advice comes down to planning ahead.
Some of the basic reminders that we tell people is just to be prepared. If you know a storm's coming or the roads are going to be potentially bad, we're asking people just to delay your travel plans, just wait a little bit until the road conditions get better.
And if you find yourself on the roads when conditions are tough, here's what he suggests.
If you are out on the roads, people should be really cautious, slow down, make sure you can keep control your vehicle at all times. Wear your seatbelt, keep your headlights on.
Winter roads can be really tricky, especially when it comes to speed and busy roads.
Of course, each crash and incident is different, but generally people are just driving too fast for conditions. A lot of it too is just the unknown, what's going on in the road and the traffic around you, that they might not be able to react to it quickly. A very easy way to combat it by slowing down.
Outside the Twin Cities, in more rural areas, winter driving can look different.
Compared to the metro, Greater Minnesota has generally less traffic traveling those roadways. So with that, there might be less road maintenance vehicles there, like DOT or county workers plowing and salting. So Northwest Minnesota, there were a significant amount of winds. So it's whiteout conditions. There's just a lot more of that in Greater Minnesota.
And for those who drive every day, winter requires a different kind of focus.
My name is Veronica Nieto. I currently drive for Metro Micro. We are a third party to Metropolitan Council. So my service is front door service to pick up and drop off. The Metro Micro buses, they seat up to, with myself included, 9 passengers, and it fits 2 regular size wheelchairs.
Veronica's responsible for getting people where they need to go safely, no matter the weather or the time of day.
Metro Micro is actually a public service that anyone can use. We cater to all kinds of people, kids that are going to school, the elderly. With winter, I can only imagine what I'm going to run into.
Winter doesn't just change the roads. It changes the way she goes about her day.
I work Monday through Friday. Currently, because of the snowfall, we have to take our time getting there. So mentally, I prepare myself as I'm going to work. Expect the unexpected, be on guard.
And when you're driving people who are counting on you, that means paying attention to every move on the road.
With the conditions and, you know, with the fog that we've had lately, your reaction and ability to stop is shortened by a lot.
And from Veronica's experience, there's a couple things every driver should keep in mind, especially during winter.
Give yourself enough room. I think that's the major one. I just think everyone on the road can really appreciate giving yourself that extra room just because of the unforeseen. Rushing will get you nowhere.
But regardless of where you are in the state, the American Automobile Association, also known as AAA, is one of the statewide agencies helping people get back on the roads. Brenna Knapp leads public affairs for AAA in the state of Minnesota.
If you do find yourself on the side of the road or needing assistance in a more rural area, we have a large network of partners that can get to you from your area, and they're local to the place that you'll be calling from.
We do community events, we do media informational outreach to folks, and really just promoting traffic safety throughout the state.
And the demands of the job shift with the seasons.
We certainly see a pickup in our roadside assistance, especially in the winter here in Minnesota. We do, you know, battery changes, we help people who are stuck on the side of the road.
And certain winter conditions, like slick roads or even black ice, lead to an uptick in calls for AAA.
You know, if we experience a winter weather event that leads to black ice or icy road conditions, we'll certainly see an uptick in calls for our tow drivers. If you do find yourself on the side of the road, we really do recommend that you stay in the car, stay calm. If you have AAA, give them a call or give any first responder a call.
And remembering to take your time can make all the difference when it comes to staying safe.
I know a lot of us are super busy, and it can be easy to jump in the car, and especially if it's a normal destination for you, to just drive on autopilot. But I really encourage you, in any sort of winter conditions, to take everything slowly and add a little extra care and add a little extra space between you and the person in front of you, and you're going to be golden.
Staying safe while driving in winter isn't just about snow or ice. It comes down to paying attention, being prepared, and looking out for other drivers. Whether you're in the cities or greater Minnesota, you can check out the latest road conditions on 511mn.org. For North Star Stories, I'm Jama Jama.
In our final story today, snow shoveling. It's so common that many don't realize just how dangerous it can be. Jose Osoria talks with medical professionals about steps you can take to stay safe.
It's your responsibility to clear sidewalks in front of your home or business.
So we've all heard these announcements.
Sure, it's the law, but it's also the right thing to do for your neighborhood.
But shoveling snow is not as straightforward as it might seem.
It's actually the so-called perfect storm, unfortunately, for the heart.
Dr. Courtney Jordan Beckler is a preventative cardiologist. She describes the intense strain on the body that comes with shoveling snow.
When we lift snow, it puts an extra amount of effort on the heart. It makes our heart rate increase. It makes our blood pressure increase.
But it's not just the workout that's causing the stress on your body.
The cold weather causes our arteries to constrict and get much smaller,
turning a routine chore into a potentially fatal experience if you're at risk or if specific precautions are not followed.
Emergency. What's the location?
Bobby Hood is the operations and marketing manager for Snow Scholars, a snow shoveling service that hires college students in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and other locations throughout the country.
Health is wealth. And if you need to spend a little bit of extra money on a service, and if that's going to keep you, you know, safe and healthy, by all means do so.
Roddy Hood views the work that Snow Scholars provide as a public service for the community.
That's why we service so many, you know, elders within the community, is because they can't do it themselves, because they'll fall. They'll end up hurting themselves, or the snow is so heavy.
Yet even fit college students need to be very cautious when they're out there working in the elements.
Even, you know, for young people like us, it's demanding, it's physical, it's labor. Just making sure you know yourself. When you're doing that for anywhere between 6 hours and above, it's a lot.
The American Journal of Emergency Medicine published a research study showing that shoveling snow sends on average over 11,000 adults to the emergency room each year. Dr. Beckler points out that even otherwise in-shape people need to listen to their body.
You don't get on the treadmill and go to an all-out sprint on a big incline, right? You want to start things slowly, see how you feel, and progress as you feel comfortable. It's an exercise.
She also points out some of the warning signs you should pay close attention to if you find yourself out there doing heavy shoveling.
Difficulty breathing, shortness of breath, a racing heart rate, chest pressure or chest discomfort, all of those types of things can be concerns from the heart.
But if you have to be out there and you are at risk, Dr. Beckler says there is an approach.
If possible, asking somebody else, a neighbor, a friend, to help you out is a great way to go. But if you absolutely have to do it, doing small amounts of snow and pushing it rather than lifting it is really important.
Roddy Hood says there's an advice he gives to Minnesotans he consults with.
Being smart, you know, especially when you come from or grown up in a state like Minnesota, we've been around the snow for forever. Being mindful of your environment, knowing the conditions, making sure that you've taken the correct preparation.
The American Heart Association lists some helpful tips to protect yourself while shoveling. Dress for the weather, stay hydrated, warm up before shoveling, do not overexert yourself. Listen to your body, and watch out for warning signs. For North Star Stories, I'm Jose Osoria.
This is all the time we have for today's program. If you missed any part of today's newscast, you can find this and past episodes at ampers.org or listen to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with more stories and voices from the North Star State.
North Star Stories is produced by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the State of Minnesota, online at ampers.org.
You're listening to Minnesota Native News. I'm Murray Rock. This week, we hear how the Shakopee Mdewakanton Sioux Communities campaign to boost Native youth wellness is expanding its reach across Minnesota, and how an archival project is preserving Indigenous music for future generations. First, producer Dan Ninham talks with IndigiFit Kids organizers about their first coaching academy.
The Shakopee Mdewakanton Sioux community started IndigiFit Kids, a $6 million three-year philanthropic campaign. The initiative aims to improve the physical fitness and mental wellness of Native youth in Minnesota. To grow the campaign statewide, IndigiFit Kids held a coaching academy.
We really created this academy to empower the adults who work with our youth so that they can help understand some of the disparities that are existing within our Native youth.
Ashley Cornforth is the secretary treasurer for the Shakopee Mdewakanton Sioux community.
This coaching academy was kind of a hands-on way to learn tools to really strengthen leadership skills.
Nearly 50 coaches and community practitioners from across Minnesota attended the two-day academy in Shakopee in September 2025.
We created curriculum based off of the stuff that we implement to the youth that we serve.
Clint Begay is a citizen of the San Felipe and has led a Pueblos and Dene and the director of the NB3FIT coaching team. The coaching academy content was developed and presented by the Nota Begay 3, our NB3 Foundation. based in New Mexico and founded by the golfing champion it's named after.
We do all kinds of sports, so everything that we taught was based off of all of those activities.
The next goal for Ashley and others involved with IndigiFit Kids is to expand programming statewide.
We have